This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za. You're listening to Lerato Mbele on Power 98.7. Weekdays, 9 a.m. to midday. Now we're talking.
All right, let's talk about the Commonwealth. I think as the word suggests, that's what it is. It is looking after the common interests, certainly of countries that formerly were colonies of Britain. But in the modern day, the Commonwealth has expanded its membership to countries that have no relationship whatsoever with the British Crown historically. Countries like Rwanda and Mozambique are part of the Commonwealth, and they don't have that history. And so generally, the whole idea is that these countries from Africa, Asia, Europe and the Pacific Islands need to come together in terms of shared interests in the world, solving problems of the world, and see if they can offer another aspect of multilateral intervention to social issues. Now, because of this regional sway, 56 independent countries being part of the Commonwealth, they elect or appoint a leader rotationally. And so right now, the outgoing Secretary General of the Commonwealth, Baroness Patricia Scotland, is from Dominica. She's from the Caribbean islands, is making way for a candidate from Africa. And if my history serves me well, the last time an African was Secretary General of the Commonwealth, it was when the Nigerian chief, Emeka Anyaoku, was Secretary General for a 10-year period between 1990 and year 2000. And so that leadership role is coming back to Africa. And the nominee for the position is Lesotho's former Minister of Trade and Industry. He himself, a seasoned diplomat, and politician, has been a senator in the government of the Kingdom of Lesotho, a minister of trade and industry between 2015 and 2017. He's had a lot of international work as well. He's worked with the World Bank, and he's worked in the field of development economics as well as head of the National Development Corporation of Lesotho and also as MD for the Technology Bank for Least Developed Countries. His name is Joshua Setipa, and he is the candidate and nominee for the post of Secretary General of the Commonwealth. Good luck and congratulations, Joshua Setipa.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on your program.
It is our pleasure. So you have said that your personal vision for the Commonwealth is a fortified and responsive Commonwealth. And I can tell you the word responsive is the one that jumped out at me first, because I thought, you know what? This Commonwealth exists, 56 independent member states. We know very little about it in this modern world where there's a G7, G20, BRICS and all manner of things. And maybe it needs to be responsive.
Well, I think if we go back in history, and I think if we take South Africa, which, or Southern Africa, I think, which is a good example, we will recall that it was the Commonwealth that led the fight against the minority regime in Zimbabwe, the Ian Smith government after the unilateral declaration of independence. Mm-hmm. It was the Commonwealth that pushed for for that government to be brought down and for multi-party democracy and the rights of the majority, who, as we know, were black Zimbabweans, to be recognized. It was also the Commonwealth that led the process that defeated apartheid in South Africa and the organization and of the first elections in 1994. Mm. So from that angle, the Commonwealth has a long history in supporting African, particularly the post-independence period in Africa. We have seen the same in Asia, in countries like Pakistan. We've seen it in the Pacific. Mm. So there is a long history of that. In my own country of Lesotho, of course, the Commonwealth has been very instrumental in supporting a return to multi-party democracy after a long period of military coups, institutional support, which also helped us reform our our constitution to allow for an electoral system that encoded everybody. And I think this is actually timely given the recent developments in South Africa and the outcome of the recent elections.
Right.
The Commonwealth has been quite active in supporting democracy across its member
across
states.
The world. Okay, and so that's at a political governance level, and as you're saying, you know, with multiple crises in the world, we might not see the Commonwealth as robustly as we've done in the past, but they've been involved in other areas. I certainly know that they've been involved in countries like Pakistan and Southern Asia as well. What does a fortified Commonwealth mean? What do you mean by that term?
Fortified because, as you rightly point out, today every single member state in the Commonwealth, and this is not just exclusive to Commonwealth countries across the world are facing an ever-changing list of complex problems ranging from climate change, sovereign debt, international security, high cost of living, and a whole range of other issues that pandemics, as we've just seen recently with COVID. Now, that means that countries are looking to the development partners like the UN, like the Commonwealth, to be able to provide support and innovative interventions that will help countries cope with these challenges.
Yeah.
The Commonwealth is not immune to that. It is Commonwealth countries are faced with these countries. And also remember that the Commonwealth is, as you rightly point out, is an association of 56 equal states.
Mm.
The largest is India with 1.2 billion people, and the smallest is Nauru with 10,000 people. So the diversity of the membership is also that what makes the Commonwealth unique. The other point, I think, also responding to your first observation, that we've not had, we do not hear much about the Commonwealth compared to, for example, BRICS and other groupings globally.
Mm.
The Commonwealth has a long history of, the motto is not helping the world negotiate. So we quietly work in the background to facilitate dialogue that helps unblock or at least move or achieve progress in certain key areas.
Right.
And we've done that for the last 75 years.
Right. You know, and as you're speaking, I'm thinking, you know, in the early 90s, certainly when South Africa was in the throes of its own democracy, you know, there was a military regime that was... there was a military regime in Nigeria and one that has completely repressed the rights of environmentalists and citizens. And so the whole Ken Saro-Wiwa issue that came up played itself out on the Commonwealth stage, if I could say that. And Nigeria being suspended from the Commonwealth, that military regime for its atrocities against minorities in Delta State and River State is something that became internationally recognizable. And so those are some of the issues where we see the Commonwealth coming in to speak up against injustices, against violation of rights of minorities and marginalized people on environmental issues, political issues. Okay. So in 2024, how would the Commonwealth describe priorities or the crises and the kinds of issues it should be involved in?
The 56 countries that are members of the Commonwealth all subscribe to a set of principles and values. And it is those values that determine or guide their interaction amongst themselves, between themselves, and also on how they are expected to conduct themselves, particularly in relation to how they manage the affairs of their respective countries.
Mm.
Now, if you take what is happening today in West Africa, we see an increasing pressure on democratic institutions. I would say democracy is under attack.
Yeah.
We've seen unconstitutional changes of government in West Africa, and of course there is a potential that can also spill over into the Commonwealth. The other part of the work that the Commonwealth does, which you will not see in newspapers because of its sensitivity, is the good offices of the Commonwealth Secretary General.
Mm.
And this is the interventions, these are the interventions that the Secretary General undertakes whenever there are signs of any potential challenges or problems. Particularly, we've seen most of the time it relates to outcome of election results.
Mm.
In my own country, in Lesotho, in Zambia, and a host of other countries where in Kenya recently, also even in Nigeria, where the Secretary General intervened, diffuses the crisis, and we're able to see outcomes respected and a national, the popular vote, or at least the choice of the people respected. That is the type of work that the Commonwealth does. Most people only see the Commonwealth, or at least they always see the Commonwealth more visibly when there are elections in their countries. But there is a lot of other work that has been done. We provide support to institutions, the judiciary, debt management, and so forth. All these are intended to help countries deal with the current list of challenges that they face. Most countries, as a result of the impact of COVID, are struggling with high levels of sovereign debt.
Yeah.
The Commonwealth provides support on sovereign debt, not just to Commonwealth countries, by the way,
yeah,
to countries across the world. So that's just the highlight of some of the work that okay, has been done.
Okay. So in a post-COVID era, obviously, the world's got a different kind of problem that it needs to manage, which is inclusion, which is countries managing debt, social relief, social distress is what we call it in South Africa, and many countries that had to step in, research, medical research. And so the Commonwealth would come in on some of those, would come in and make interventions in some of those areas, certainly so that the social justice is what you're saying, so that those who need medicines are given medicines, those governments that need some relief are given some budgetary support so that they can support the poor.
Yes.
Okay.
I should also highlight, Lerato, that in my vision, the Commonwealth, particularly if one takes the case of Africa, Africa has outlined or articulated a number of strategic key political priorities, for example, regional integration, the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, and its implementation is a very key priority for Africa. Now, the Commonwealth, like a strong partner for Africa, has to be supportive of that. So we see trade as a significant potential for driving inclusive growth, not just on the African continent, but across the Commonwealth. 2.5 billion people, that's a significant market size, which if we focus on enhancing capacity to trade, and I'm not suggesting that the Commonwealth begin to trade to negotiate free trade agreements, but we can build capacity to trade, that's what will unlock the inclusive growth that we want to see. We have to work with countries in Africa, we have to work with countries in the Pacific to manage or mitigate the impact of climate change. We're seeing a higher, increasing number of climate-related emergencies, floods, and so forth, which are disrupting society, are disrupting economies. The Commonwealth and other partners has to mobilize to support them. But of course, the other area of strength for the Commonwealth is to advocate. The Commonwealth is able to advocate on behalf of their member states across other forums, whether it's in the reform of the international financial architecture, in the Bretton Woods institutions, addressing issues around reparations.
Right.
All those are political priorities of member states, and the Commonwealth has the capacity to support that those initiatives.
All right. So you're being a candidate from Southern Africa. I know that you've got to represent all 56 member countries or their interests, certainly within the secretariat. But do you think you would use the Commonwealth as a stepping stone, as a lever for addressing some pressing issues in SADC? For instance, there's conflict in northern Mozambique. There are some environmental challenges caused by drought at the moment, and some food security issues in Zambia and Zimbabwe, in Botswana. And of course, then there are questions around strengthening democracies in this part of the world. Eswatini, for instance.
The Commonwealth and the work that the Commonwealth has been doing in the region over the past decade will continue. And under my leadership, the aim will be to increase resources and mobilize increased resources towards that work. The work around supporting institutions around democracy, that's a priority because it goes to the heart of the values that the Commonwealth is built upon. There is also an urgent need to work with governments. And you cited the case of Mozambique. We know that unless we collectively support Mozambique to deal with this emerging crisis and radicalization that we've seen, which is threatening a democratically elected government in Mozambique, then the entire region will be impacted. So the Commonwealth as a partner has a role to play to mobilize the global efforts towards that. There's also the work that we do on climate change. One of the challenges that countries like Lesotho face is that every time there is a COP conference where countries meet to agree to commitments of climate change, resources are committed. Multilateral funds are established, but very few countries access that money.
Yeah.
So the Commonwealth has been helping countries access that money through its climate finance access program. I will increase that effort so that countries are able to mobilize, access those resources, and then be able to develop a national loss and damage plans, which will be funded through those initiatives, and then begin to mitigate the impact of climate change on our communities. I mean, I come from Lesotho. We never used to have snow in November. In Lesotho, these days you get snow in November, which is very disruptive. And then it leads, of course, to food security issues.
Yeah.
So there's a whole range of issues. Education is one core area where the Commonwealth has been very
very important,
active. Youth, 1.5 billion people in the Commonwealth under the age of 30. That's a huge demographic potential there, a dividend there to be exploited. But unless it's human capital that is qualitative, then we cannot really exploit that potential. So we have to work with partners to make sure that the youth in Southern Africa, the youth in SADC, the youth across the Commonwealth have the right skills for today's economy.
Let's talk about cooperation, Ntate Sithibe. And what I mean by that is obviously we're starting to see the phenomenon of multipolarity in the world. You know, 20 years ago, the world was made up of America and Europe, and then perhaps Russia, and then China. But now there are different centers of power emerging with different interests, and then they overlap. Sometimes issues overlap with global agendas at the UN and WTO. Sometimes they don't, and they become more regional focused. So this idea of South-South cooperation, whilst you're working within the general status quo of a UN system, of a G20, G7 system, there's now BRICS, for instance, in formation, ASEAN, and the rise of the Asian Pacific region. And then there's the Commonwealth. And then there are other kinds of South-South formations as well. What levels of cooperation do you see emerging? And do you compete with any of these organizations?
The Commonwealth is part of the global multilateral governance system. That's how it has always been, and that's how it should continue to be. Because unless we're able to continue to demonstrate the relevance of the Commonwealth as a partner from a multilateral governance perspective, then we would lose the political energy that the Commonwealth requires to sustain its relevance. The reality today also is that in those 56 member states, every single global grouping that you can think of, the Commonwealth is represented. Whether you're talking about the G7, whether you're talking about the G20, or you're talking about BRICS, there's a member or members of Commonwealth countries that are members of those groupings. The other interesting development is that, as you rightly point out, there are recent developments have led scholars and other policy observers to begin to say there's emergence of a polarized world. But then on the other hand, multilateral initiatives have never been popular, have never been more popular. Name any organization, any institution or any grouping today, the BRICS, the waiting line is of countries that have expressed interest in joining is growing by the day. Whether it's NATO, even the Commonwealth, countries that not have the historical legacy that was there initially, as you mentioned in your introduction, like Rwanda. Today we have Gabon. We have we have countries that were traditionally not part of the British system are now queuing to join the Commonwealth. So it means that for me, that's a sign that globally, the relevance of the Commonwealth as a forum is still recognized. And I've not yet come across a country that says the utility of the Commonwealth is is being questioned. What we have to do is to make sure that the Commonwealth remains responsive, that the interventions that the Commonwealth undertakes reflect a very clear understanding of the priorities of the countries that it that are members.
Okay. As you're mentioning Gabon, Lesotho, Gabon and Rwanda, this then takes us back to the genesis of the Commonwealth and how it has expanded. So what is a new, modern, more agile Commonwealth look like? And in terms of representation as well, and are we likely to see more than 56 countries making up the Commonwealth in future?
The fundamental issue around membership or interest in joining the Commonwealth is subscription to the values of the Commonwealth. Mm. And those values underscore the importance of the right of or the respect of the will of people to choose the leaders they want, the respect for human rights, the tolerance around diversity in religion, in sexual orientation, in color, in everything. Those are the key values that every country that has ambitions of joining the Commonwealth has to subscribe to. When those are violated, that's when you get countries suspended. And today, as we speak, Gabon has been suspended because of its recent coup. Mm. Zimbabwe is in the process of rejoining the Commonwealth after leaving 13 years ago. Mm. You mentioned the case of Nigeria when during Sani Abacha's time, when Nigeria was expelled from the Commonwealth, ironically during the time of Chief Emeka as Secretary General. So looking forward, those that are interested in joining the Commonwealth have to commit to those principles. That's the minimum requirement. Okay. Before any consideration. Now, the country itself has to decide for itself whether whether they can be able to,
right,
to meet those expectations.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you one controversial question, and then let's see how you bat it out. So a country like Jamaica has always been part of the Commonwealth. They're still part of the Commonwealth, but the same country woke up and said, you know what, we also need to cut those historic ties with the British monarchy. We need to stand as a sovereign state and not under the crown. And so there's always this tension of whether or not members of the Commonwealth, especially those that have those historical colonial links, are they still very much under, as it were, the auspices of the British crown? You know, we say they are fully independent, equal states. Is it an equal relationship? And is that a tension that continues to exist?
Today, we have 56 equal states, sovereign states around the table that are members of the Commonwealth that do not swear allegiance to any other head of state in any other country. Yes, the historical links, and I think we have to go back to 75 years ago because I think that's when this process started, when India in 1947 became a republic. And the decision was made whether India, because now they were a republic and they'd renounced they were no longer under the crown, whether they could still be Commonwealth members. And that was the decision to allow India to continue to be in the Commonwealth as an independent sovereign republic is what laid the foundation for the modern Commonwealth. So today you've got countries that recently, I think in the Caribbean, Barbados, I think 2 years ago, became a republic. Mm. And there are other countries that I suspect are going to follow that. That does not mean that they stop being the Commonwealth member states or that they stop subscribing to the values of the Commonwealth. What changes is that they move from having the head of state or the king of England as a sovereign in their respective countries, and they become republics. But they continue to be full members of the Commonwealth. Lesotho is a kingdom. The king of England is not a sovereign in Lesotho, unlike in Australia, for example. Mm. But that does not make Lesotho a less member of the Commonwealth. The other reality also is that, yes, the head of Queen Elizabeth and right now King Charles is the head of the Commonwealth. But that is a ceremonial position that does not bring any special powers in terms of having more powers than the other members around the table.
Okay, and that's
they are all equal member states. Yes. But the Republican movement across the Commonwealth in other parts of not just in the Caribbean is something that we will see in the coming years. But it's a sovereign right. Every country has the right to do that. But it does not take away from their commitment to the Commonwealth and being part of the Commonwealth.
Well, Well, Ndate Joshua Setipe, we wish you well. He's the former Minister of Trade and a candidate for the Secretary General of the Commonwealth, as the existing Secretary General is preparing to step down. As we said, the leadership happens on a regional rotational basis. It's currently being held by somebody who comes from Dominica, so from the Caribbean states. In its next incantation, the leader should come from Africa. And so what we know is that there is a candidate in the form of Lesotho's former Minister of Trade, who is a candidate, a nominee for the Commonwealth Secretary General position. But there's also going to be a candidate, we're told, from Tanzania and Ghana. Good luck to you, sir. May the best man or woman win, but in any case, Africa wins ultimately. The last time an African was Secretary General of the Commonwealth was between the years 1990 and year 2000, when Chief Emeka Anyaoko held the position.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.